Howdy-do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, December 19th, 2019. It is Star Wars Day. I cannot tell you how excited I am. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. In case you've ever met me, you know that this is not news. I have two awesome people with me today who probably don't want to talk about Star Wars, so we'll have to see if we can talk about something else instead. I have Dave Hamilton with me. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me. I actually would love to talk about Star Wars, but we'll have to do that in another venue.
Yeah. Also, I haven't seen it yet.
Same.
So we have a little bit of time. So thank you for being here, Dave. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John. May the force be with you.
Hi, Kelly. May the force be with me, too.
You're going to need it today. And I will explain that to people a little later in the show. But for right now, John, I want to start with you and some stuff that we were talking about before the show. We got to talking about Facebook and location data, which led to a little bit more about the general use of location data and how that all fits together.
Well, what tickled my fancy was Charlotte, of course, published this article based on CNBC about lawmakers looking at how Facebook accesses and uses your location data. And apparently, even when you turn location services off for your Facebook app, it still tracks you. And this has come to the attention of Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri and Chris Coons from Delaware. And they're asking Facebook, you know, what's going on here? Why is it continuing to track you? And it's sort of, and the upshot was, is that when you turn location services off for the Facebook app, it uses other methods to figure out where you are. It uses your IP address to localize you. It uses information you may be posting to friends about where you are, what you're doing. And these are sort of indirect ways of accessing your location. And the thing is that it started me wondering about whether this is a clever exploitation of the state of affairs in iOS, or whether Apple could have done something to ensure more privacy when you turn location services off and trigger a series of blocking events. So we had an interesting discussion about this in the morning meeting, kind of flesh things out. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we are with this right now, and invite Dave to come in and
So
what you think.
Yeah, so this is interesting, right? Because when you say, I don't want my location tracked, either in Safari on the web, or on your Mac, on your desktop, or in iOS when, you know, you get the little dialogue and you turn that off. The problem is that only turns some things off, right? It means that it won't share the device won't share anything it knows about your location. Mm-hmm. It is a passive block in that there's nothing. If you say yes, then the device will share things that it knows, like perhaps GPS data or other things to really help pinpoint your location. But if you say no, it doesn't do anything to stop someone from sussing out your location. And what I mean by that is, for years, decades, in fact, there has been a very simple way of sussing out someone's general location, generally down to the city level, and that's by looking at where your IP address is registered. Your your internet service provider, especially if you're on a desktop machine or, you know, even on Wi-Fi at home, those types of connections can get pretty granular, again, down to the city level of where you are visiting from. And nothing, if you say, no, don't share my location data, well, you're still talking to a server somewhere out there, and that server needs to know your IP address in order to send data back to you. And that then means they have your IP and could do a reverse lookup. And if you want to mess with this, there's a company called MaxMind, M-A-X-M-I-N-D, that sells access to databases like this. And you can test it for free online at their website. You can just put in your IP address or anyone's IP address, and it'll tell you some information about it. Mm-hmm. And you can get a feel for, you know, what this means. What also happens with your IP address, yes, that's location data, but also now your IP at home generally doesn't change a whole lot. Like, you may have the same IP address at home for a year, mm-hmm. and And that then means they can cross-reference your activity from one session to the next, even if you're in a private browsing window and all of that stuff. And this isn't just theoretical. This is used constantly.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, when somebody came to us on the, at Mac Observer years ago, and said, oh, you know, we want to be able to help track people so that we can credit you for, you know, when people, if they see an ad, but they don't click on it. Well, if we know they saw the ad, then, if, you know, we track them by IP address and now we can give you credit for that. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Right.
Sure.
But like most of you, I hope, or like me, I hope most of you are cringing at that thought, because that's what led to all this creepy stuff. When we humans have access to that data, and I don't necessarily mean the three of us here, but humans in general, and especially, you know, when you're in marketing and you want to attribute things and all of that, the temptation is to take that and run way too far with it. And you're gonna be shocked about this, Kelly. So recently, a company named Chartable came to us, and yes, I am willing to call them out by name, saying that they were going to work with podcast advertisers. And all they wanted to do is take our, whenever we do not, we said no, just for the record, you're not being tracked by
Chartable. Dave's skipping ahead to the end. Just take a deep breath and go with us on this journey.
Yes. Right. But they said, we want you to redirect all of your podcast downloads through our server. And all we're going to capture is IP address and user agent. And I'm like, okay, well, that seems like a lot. And I'm like, okay, keep going. And then they're like, yeah. And then we're going to put a tracking pixel on the websites of the sponsors that you have. And we'll cross-reference those. So we'll know, even if somebody doesn't use your coupon code or whatever it is in your podcast, we can cross-reference it and know that they heard about us on your podcast and then came bought from the sponsor here. And then we can give you credit for that. Doesn't that sound like a great idea? And I'm like, it would if we didn't know better.
Yeah.
And like, I was shocked that in 2019, like this was less than 3 months ago that I had this conversation with these people. And I said, no, first of all, I don't think with GDPR and the new California thing that we could even legally do that without your consent. And I don't know how we would get your consent to download. Like, how does that going to work? Because mm-hmm. your podcast client doesn't allow you to choose. But also it's 2019. Like, we know better. No, you can't. Yeah. No, you cannot. And the person that I was speaking with there, it was as though they were fairly high up. It was as though they hadn't even thought about this before and said, man, I hope I have a job in 2 years. It's like, yeah, I hope you don't have this job doing this thing in 2 years. Do something different.
I hope it's another job.
These are the things that can be done without you ever knowing. And the only way to get around it would be if you connect through a VPN. Right, because then your IP address is obscured.
So it's one of the features of the internet, Dave.
It is correct.
Common sense memes and turn them into devious behavior. A simple example would be like you go to your TV and you turn your TV off, and you think, of course, when the electronics are shut down, then everything is not working, and so the manufacturer figures out how to leave the microphone on and transmit it through Wi-Fi. Even though the screen is blank because you think you've turned the TV off. And this kind of thing happens all the time. And it's happening in the Facebook app. You turn location services off and they're depending, I think, on your common sense understanding of what that means and then bypassing it on purpose.
Yep.
And this happens all the time on the internet.
Well, and, you know, that was the point I was going to make, John, is that Facebook is sort of who showed us how all this stuff can be turned against us. And weaponized, you know,
For sure. Yeah.
I mean,
we've always known this, but Facebook sort of took it into another level, but also in a very public way. Like, they make they're not ashamed about it. It's really what it is.
That's, because it's going to happen again and it's not going to matter and, you know, all of that. So, like, when I think about watching the Jetsons as a kid, and, you know, we would hear stuff about how in the future, capital T, capital F, the future, right? Like, you will have like a profile and it'll be like the stuff that you like and the stuff that you don't. The only ads you'll see will be ads for stuff you're actually interested in. That sounds great.
Yeah, right.
And it does until it's Facebook that holds all that information, who isn't interested in keeping it secure. Obviously, and isn't interested in being upfront about what it is they're doing with that information and isn't interested in curating any of that information and making sure that what you get, what you're getting is legitimate or valid or true. And because the check didn't bounce. So that's why they don't care. And, you know, it's one thing to feel like this stuff is all going to be motivated by a company who only wants to show you the ads for stuff you want, because then you'll buy stuff all the time. Like every time you see an ad, ooh, I want that. That would be, you know, if you're a company doing that kind of advertising, that would be amazing if you're only showing your ads to the people who already want to buy it or who should already want to buy it. That would be fantastic, right, Dave? If there was a way to do that, like...
Oh, yeah, opting in. Like, it is, I feel like, and I could be wrong, I feel like it is fair to assume that if you were to visit one of our sponsors where we say, look, go to this URL, use promo code TDO to get a, you know, a discount or whatever. And sometimes we even say explicitly, like, it's great because not only does it get you a discount, but it lets them know that we are the ones that sent you. I assume, even if we don't say that last part, I assume that by putting in that code TDO, you are opting into saying TDO are the ones that sent me here. I assume that that's implied. Now, I could be wrong, and maybe, you know, there's listeners out there that haven't thought about that before, and if so, I'm sorry. But that
but now you know.
Like that's a safe... now. And also, now you know. Now, yeah, it's not just us, it's every show. But I feel like that's a much safer assumption, because you are taking an action that is relating your activity on one website to another website, or in this case, a podcast, right? Mm-hmm. It's when you don't choose, like you might choose, like, hey, look, the $10 that I'm going to save by using code TDO, I don't like to be tracked, so I'm not going to save the $10. I'm fine with that. I'm not going to put it in. Well, if we were, and again, we're not using that service that I described earlier, you could, in theory, still be tracked. And there are shows doing that right now. And you don't know which ones they are. I don't even know which ones they are. You'd have to dig through their RSS feeds and all that stuff. So it starts getting very, very... And it, again, this is, like John said, this is nothing new. It is a feature of the internet, mm-hmm. and it has been going on since long before podcasts existed. It hasn't been going on quite as long as the web has existed, but it didn't take too long for that to start, because the data is right there. I often equate this to when email was created. You know, Ray Tomlinson never thought to build spam controls into email because there was no spam, right?
Literally, it didn't occur to him that that's how people would be communicating advertisements, especially if you don't want them.
Right. Why would you waste all these valuable resources communicating stuff that people don't want to get? Well, now, if you were to redesign the way email protocols work, you definitely put some things in there to prevent against spam. And in fact, they have been redesigned many times over the years to iterate and evolve and put some protections in. But it's hard to go and change the core, because it means everybody's core has to change. So anyway, it's a difficult problem to solve. You can't put the genie all the way back in the bottle. You know, you can't close Pandora's box is what it is.
And I think the scope of what's happening in 2019 could fill a textbook.
Oh yeah.
Most people don't understand this. They just have simple common sense rules about how to handle their phone. And all this stuff that's going on behind the scenes is just totally beyond comprehension.
And it's not just Facebook. You know, Facebook is, like I said, they're unashamed about it.
Yeah.
But they're not the only ones using, and they're not the first. They won't be the last. You know, there's a lot of people. More often than not, this stuff is being tracked.
Mm-hmm. Why did it take legislators so long to get on board with this?
Because they didn't understand it.
Is it really that long? I mean, to us, it seems like a long time. But, you know, we're just talking a few decades here. It's like, These things take a while to evolve.
I think it's a matter of it turning into something that could be easily communicated to somebody whose life is not web design, web development, technology protocols. I think it's pretty safe to say that the three of us spend a lot more time on this kind of thing and thinking about this kind of thing than most people do. And if you're a senator, like, you have a whole other set of... You know, or if you're a congressman, you have a whole other set of things that you work on and stuff that you do that, like, I don't know anything about. And I think it's just a matter of being able to communicate it clearly and turn it into something that sounds like something that a lawmaker should be doing something about. And I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. We're finally there. I mean, clearly, but yeah, I don't feel like it took too long. This stuff evolves, you know, I know I get off on tangents, especially when I'm hopped up on like cold medicine or whatever, but you know, I think about this in terms of, I look back at other technologies that are more evolved. And so let's look at the car, right? When the first car came out, you didn't need a driver's license. You didn't need, there were no like roads or signs or traffic lights or even stop signs or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then once those things started to be added, everybody sort of had to learn. There were no rules written. We wrote them as we went. And so I think about the four-way stop. Think about how perfect that, I mean, it's not perfect, but it's relatively perfect.
Well, when everyone stops, it is.
Right. But everybody that comes up to a four-way stop, generally speaking, knows what's supposed to happen here.
Yes.
No, they don't.
Well, but bear with, just go with me for a second here.
There's a little wrinkle on a four-way stop that you're trying to allude to.
I understand.
And that is you yield to the person on your right. But nobody knows that rule. Everybody.
But you know that rule. And I know that rule. And Kelly knows that rule. There's a lot of people, because there aren't accidents at four-way stops, right? People show up, they all stop, and then one at a time they go. And sometimes there's a little bit of negotiation.
It's just visual stutter step.
But see, that's the thing. Think about if you put a four-way stop in place when the first four automobiles were on the road, no one would have known what to do.
Yeah.
And so that's a pretty evolved thing that it doesn't require lights or sensors or anything. It's just humans understanding how to use their technology in relation to how others are using their technology. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty advanced thing. We are not yet at the four-way stop point of smartphones, internet. Like, right. We're not there yet. We're getting there, but
I would argue, Dave, we're not even at the ATM point where everybody knows, you know, if you go there alone at night, don't take out $1,000 and stand there counting all your money, you know, like basic, like, you know, again, this is the kind of stuff I talk about all the time, basic security. Like, we have that culturally because when you first get a bank account, you know, whoever, your parents or whoever, like, tell you, like, here's some things you need to keep in mind. When you first get a car, lock the doors and roll up all the windows, don't leave your laptop in the front seat. Basic security. And we're only just now getting to that point with technology where people are going, a VPN might be a good idea, or asking the questions about, like, how much information is still out there, even if I turn off location services. If I turn it on, what additional information am I sharing? And that kind of stuff is important. So that's why we keep talking about it here.
So the sticky issue is if Apple had a policy that says when the user turns off location services, you can't track them at all. And if Apple found that the Facebook app were in violation of that policy, no matter how obvious or non-deceptive or sneaky or whatever means they use to identify your location, in spite of location services turned off, Apple could say, you know, your app is kicked out of the App Store. But they won't do that.
And there would be much rejoicing because it's Facebook.
Too much at stake. Facebook's too powerful.
Yeah.
So is Apple folding in the face of that?
They would have to throw out every app from the App Store.
And
I mean, there's very few that would, like, there's very few apps that operate online that would be able to remain if that were this test.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here because this is a conversation for another day. For what value of location data we need to talk about, because we want to move on real quick. We have a little bit of a spotlight to shine, and we're going to shine that on the mailbag. I tell you guys all the time that you can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter. You can leave comments in the show notes, and sometimes people do that. And I want to shine a tiny little light on Lauren. Hi, Lauren. Because Lauren wrote into us, and he talked a little bit about the Mac Pro and the Mac Mini, and he sent a follow-up message that said, and I quote, "What's John looking for? The fins off a 1958 Cadillac? John, as evidenced by your oversized displays, you are blind." And I just wanted to let Lauren know.
This was in reference to my feelings that the Mac Mini is not a spectacularly typical Apple, beautiful, industrial of design winner. And something that looks really cool. And so he says, well, yeah, but, you know, if you're going to put it on a server rack, you don't care.
Well, he also points out that this also sort of reminded him of the complaints that Apple wasn't going to go Intel. If Apple didn't go Intel, they'd be doomed. And eventually, Apple did what they wanted and like allowed clones. And that just proved that, you know, Apple wasn't necessarily ready for that. And so he said, Apple knows what they are doing and doesn't need comments from the peanut gallery for suggestions. I really enjoy, like, I like the design of the Mac Mini.
They have lots of opinions.
Well, I like the design of the Mac Mini the way it is. Do I think it could be interesting? Do I think it should have evolved a little more over all this time? Yes, I do.
Yeah,
but I don't think
so
what they have is bad. It's just not. I think what you're saying, John, is it's not up to Apple level. Is that what you're like? It kind of feels like that's where you're going.
Every Apple product, and especially the most recent 2019 Mac Pro, they are just so awesomely beautiful to touch and to look at, and so well put together and so well designed. And the MacBook Pros are just awesome. And the brushed aluminum and the feel in your hands and the look and the sveltness and everything about these Apple Macs is just amazing. They're gorgeous, except the ugly duckling Mac Mini. And maybe because of its function, it doesn't need to be. But I just wish it were cooler.
Well,
it doesn't
seem
to fit in with the Apple lineup for some reason.
Like I said, I would like it to evolve. Like into something different. Like we did get like sort of one evolution where it went from the plastic lid and the aluminum frame around the sides to the all aluminum piece. Like that was one evolution, but that was like the only one we ever got. So I'd like, you know, I don't think the same metal in a new color making them space gray, I don't think that's considerably an evolution. Dave, what do you think of the Mini? You weren't on when we were talking about it, so.
No, I wasn't. I like the Mini. I think if I take form factor out of it, I think in terms of function, it is, and I said this when it came out last year, it is the Mac Pro for the people that don't need an actual, what is now today, a Mac Pro. That Mini is, especially the i7 Mini.
A Mac Pro for the rest of us? Oh, cough, cough, Dave, please.
No, it is. That Mac Mini i7.
Seriously? I'll give you a break.
That i7 Mac Mini has a faster CPU.
Nowhere near a Mac Pro for the rest of us.
That has a faster CPU than the fastest version of the prior Mac Pro did. You can add a
That's
GPU
just
to
time
it.
Time and evolution. If you took the black cylinder and utilized its cooling capability, such as it is, and put more advanced Xeon chips in there, then it would be brought up to date too.
Of course. But
they didn't do that.
No, they didn't. They put it in the Mac Mini, and so now you have the Mac Pro, which is truly for like the pros, and then you have the Mac Mini or the iMac. And then the iMac Pro sort of sits in the middle of those. But, you know, even that, like the 8-core iMac or the 6-core Mac
Mini.
But there's
such a gulf there. I mean, you have $799 for a Mac Mini for entry point and then $6,000 for a Mac Pro. There's an enormous gulf in there for capability that people might want to have.
But see, you're thinking about it the wrong way. I think
No, I'm not.
The Mac Mini, if you take the $1,300 Mac Mini, right, which has the i7 processor, right? And then if you add another $1,000 to that by putting in some additional RAM, perhaps, and also adding an external GPU to it so that you aren't just using the on-chip GPU, you're actually using a real GPU. Like now that is a workhorse of a machine that will do more than what most people need, even professionals.
You're going to have ice packs on it. Charlotte has an i5 in her Mac Mini and it runs hot.
They do run hot, but as long as you don't stack something on top of it, it's fine.
Right.
And the GPU, when you add that external GPU, now, you know, that's going to have its own cooling and those can run super fast and you can add multiples. So I really think people tend to overlook the flexibility that Thunderbolt offers, especially Thunderbolt 3 with the eGPU capabilities. So yeah, no, I don't see a need. It's already there. That mm-hmm. The Mac Pro Mini came out before the Mac Pro did, and it's just called a Mac Mini.
Yeah.
Poppycock.
I know. I rock that we disagree. That's totally great.
Balderdash. I'm with Dave on this, and like I can say that I have a mini at my house, and whenever it gets a little warm, I have a little desk fan that you can power over USB, and I will point that at it for a little while if I have to. But most of the time,
that's
I don't.
Pathetic. That's so pathetic. A desktop fan blowing air on your Mac Mini because it doesn't have enough capacity for cooling?
No, I just do it because
that is so
I'm trying to help my machine. I try to be nice to my computers. And one way that I can do that is if I'm setting it up to render a bunch of video, for example, then it might get warm. And one thing that I can do to help it not be so warm is point the fan that usually is pointing at me at my computer. And I do that instead. And it's fine.
That is crazy. That is crazy.
But it's not because my computer's getting too hot. It's just because I'm just giving it an assist.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's like when you sit in a warm room and you put the fan on yourself. It's a hot day and you have a fan on yourself. It's the same thing. You're not going to melt down, but it feels a little better. So that's all I'm doing. And it's not like I have a special fan for my computer. I just sometimes it's pointing at me, sometimes it's pointing at my Mac Mini.
Pro for $3,000 that has Xeon chips and has adequate cooling and has the capacity for 128 gigabytes of RAM and multiple 12 cores. Guess what it's called? It's called a 2013 Mac Pro.
Yeah, but they don't have that for you anymore, John. It's not an option.
If they updated it,
you could spend half that and get a Mac Mini.
Yeah,
that goes faster.
Well, yeah, I mean, the 2019 Mac Mini is faster than a 2013 Mac Pro, but as I said, that's just technology development.
Well, but that's where we are.
To put the Xeons from an iMac Pro into a little box and stripped out the display and had an iMac Pro Mini.
I'm sure at some level you will get your wish here. I'm sure over time the Mac Mini that we see today, the 2018/2019 Mac Mini, will see an evolution in chip speed, and that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said the other day on the show, when we were talking about the future of it, I'm a little less interested in the current iteration of all of these, and I'm interested in the next iteration. Will there be another iMac Pro? Is there going to be a 2020 update to the Mini? Are we going to get a nudge on the iMac in some way next year, like we did this year? What are those updates going to look like? Because if Apple wants to make me believe that they care about the Mac, they can't just do this once and then leave them in that configuration for another 3 or 4 years while chips continue to evolve. So I'm almost more interested in the second generation of this stuff now that Tim Cook has gone around for 18 months telling everybody how much they care about the Mac. So I want to know about those. And what I think, John, is that you will be happier with those things as that evolution continues. I think if we do get another Mini, if we get another iMac Pro, I think you'll be happier with it, even if it doesn't come with the fins that Lauren thinks you're looking for.
2020 could be an exciting year for the Mac. It could be, because there's so much to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you said.
Exactly. So that's what I'm looking forward to in the new year. So we're going to stop there. But if you feedback for us, we can talk about it on the show. We are always looking forward to it, and we want to know what you have to say. So again, observations@macobserver.com. You can talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter. You can leave comments in the show notes. Dave, thank you so much for coming by. May the force be with you.
Thanks for having me, and may the force be with you.
John, thanks for being here.
Hit it.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamod. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. I will not spoil Star Wars Rise of Skywalker for anybody. I will talk to all of you then. In the meantime, may the force be with all of you.